are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here with you on this Thursday edition of the show. Rob Lauder of Niners Nation will be my guest, talking OTAs, a shakeup at the safety position already, some veterans that might not make the cut, and a really deep wide receiver position. It's an intriguing battle going on there in camp. Before I bring him on, a quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast on the new Himalaya podcast app. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. And you can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. And let's just get right to today's guest. It's been a little while since I talked with Rob. He covers the 49ers for Niners Nation. Rob, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining the show once again.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me on. It's always a good time.
Yeah, and OTA is already getting interesting for the 49ers. Tarvarius Moore moving positions back to his college position of free safety. He had been playing cornerback for his first season. I think the plan was for him to continue playing cornerback this year, but with the injury to Jimmy Ward, I think DJ Reed is ailing as well, at least for OTAs. Robert Saleh said, well, it's just for OTAs, but we're going to move Tarvarius Moore back to free safety because we need bodies there, and we'll get him some reps and we'll see how he looks. So my question to you is, Tarvarius Moore, is he, I mean, if he was playing cornerback really well, they know they wouldn't have screwed around with him, right? So it signals to me that maybe he's a free safety anyway in the future, right? And if that's not the case, what are they doing? How did they get to this point where they expected Jimmy Ward to not be hurt? And it's funny that he got hurt like in the first week of OTAs, and they've already seemingly had to abandon their initial plan.
Right. You have to think that when they re-signed Jimmy Ward to that 1 year deal, and the reason it was a 1 year deal in the first place is because he gets hurt, you know, and you have to think that they had at least thought a little bit ahead about the fact that if he gets hurt again, or given the chance was good, you know, what were they going to do after that? I don't think one of the first things Robert Saleh was is that the free safety position has, you know, a lot of injuries there right now. So they moved Tarvarius Moore there, but I don't think it's nearly that coincidental. I think that they probably wanted to give him a try at cornerback, at least for a little bit, to see how he would hang. I've never been a big fan of the whole, let's draft a guy into the pros, the hardest level of football, the most, you know, talented level of football that exists, and have him switch positions and learn something new. You know, I understand that these guys are freak athletes and stuff like that, but to me, like, a position switch like that is just setting the person up for failure. So hopefully this, to me, signifies they're at least willing to throw him into the fire at free safety, because that's not a position. He already knows that position. So it's not like where cornerback, where he was learning all these new things. He can go back to that and feel fairly natural. And I think that that should have been the case from the start. I mean, there was nothing wrong with drafting a free safety when they selected Tarvarius Moore. So, you know, to me, it also fits. I'd like to see him get ample opportunity at that position, especially with maybe, because he was only practicing with the reserves, you know, kind of like the third string. So I'd like to see him get some time at that position against the second, maybe, you know, first string offense, just to see how he does, because there's still a huge glaring need at that position. And if a guy that has as much athletic ability as Moore does, you know, if he can fill that role, then that's a huge deal. So hopefully they're not treating it as if it's just kind of an injury safeguard right now. I'd like to see him get a real shot at starting there.
And it's, you know, just talking about the cornerback position and how they've gone about filling that when the guys they've drafted there, it's kind of surprising, because if, you know, Robert Saleh coming from Seattle and then going to Jacksonville and just knowing the guys that he had in Seattle, and he's got one of them now in Richard Sherman, and that's the prototype. It's like, okay, ideally, what would you have? You would have an Earl Thomas in center field. You would have two Richard Shermans on the outside at cornerback and a Cam Chancellor type at strong safety. I mean, that's ideally how this thing worked, and that's how it worked so well for the Seahawks, and it was dynamic. It's like, okay, so you've got some athletes. You want to put them out there because you need that range for the single high safety. And you got a big-bodied, strong safety who can body up against tight ends and take on fullbacks in the run. and go get people in the run game, but also athletic enough to cover down the field and cover those same positions. And it's like, okay, I can see Jaquaski Tartt doing that. I think he's a nice fit for that system. But then they went out, and when you're looking for a Richard Sherman, Richard Sherman's not about 4-3 speed. Richard Sherman is quite the opposite. He's about being smart and, you know, being just such a smart, instinctive zone cornerback. He's literally running routes for wide receivers, and it's pretty awesome to see, and it's something that I knew about him but didn't appreciate until I watched him closer when he came to the 49ers, how good he is and how smart he is, and it's amazing to see him run the route for the receiver like he knows, like he was in the huddle and knows the play call's coming. It's not about 4-3 speed, but they did the opposite when they tried to draft cornerbacks, is they're like, well, let's just get a guy who's a freak athlete and super fast and has some length, and we'll teach him the rest. And it feels like, well, that's not the thing. That's not, you know, this is a zone scheme. Go find the smart guys. Go find the guys that can flat out ball. And I think that's the point of this scheme, is that you don't need to have the freak shutdown type corner athlete on the outside. You get the freak athlete at free safety, and you let those guys play zone and let the guy in the back range and make up for maybe a lack of speed because you've got smart, heady football players at cornerback. Does it seem a little backwards the way they've gone after corners so far?
Yeah, it's been a little weird. To me, it's almost their addressing of the position has been a little bit too circumstantial, in my opinion. You know, hoping things work out a certain way. I was a big fan of the Akello Witherspoon pick when they drafted him, and I still am one of the, I wouldn't say a supporter of Witherspoon, but I still think that there's a chance that he could work out and develop. You know, he's had some rough breaks here and there, but he's still shown, I wouldn't say consistently, but he's had consistent stretches of where he can show him he could be the guy, and he can at least be effective. So outside of that, you know, I just wouldn't think that addressing the cornerback position, especially a position that's proven itself to be so pivotal on a defensive in a defensive success, you don't want to take somebody who you're leaving up to chance, like a free safety that you're trying to convert to a cornerback. I understand he's an amazing athlete, but give me a guy that has proven that he can play cornerback, like you're saying, that proven that he can play it at a high level, and that's where he's a natural fit. And Eric Crocker would tell you this all day long. I couldn't care if a dude's over 6 feet tall or not. Like, give me a guy who's just good at playing the position. And I kind of feel the same way about wide receivers. Just give me a guy who's shown that he can play and he can ball, and he's got that attitude, and he's got that fight, and he's going to want to step up against the league's best receiver and go to town, you know? So I just feel like draft guys who you're sure can do what you need them to do, not hoping they can do what you need them to do, kind of with the way they treated Tarvarius Moore. So the other thing I would say, too, is that I don't disagree with the way they handled the position is, you know, a lot of people were kind of like, you know, the whole punter in the fourth round thing, why couldn't they have taken a, you know, a safety or a corner? Well, the odds of getting a safety or a corner that you really is going to have the impact that you really want at that part of the draft, it's difficult. It's, you know, most of them are off the board. So if you're going to invest in the secondary again, like I'm assuming they're going to do soon, make it an investment where you know that guy is no longer like necessarily competing for the job. He's like they all have to compete, but he's the clear favorite, you know, draft a corner in the first round or the second round, something like that, where you know that is like your guy at that position and you're willing to give him time. You know, I think the reason that they kind of avoided that in the draft was because there's still a lot of what ifs in the secondary. You know, what if Jimmy Ward is healthy? You know, we see how that works out. What if, you know, Akello Witherspoon, Tavarius Moore, Jason Brett, who wins that competition? You know, you don't, if you draft a guy in the first or second round of those positions, the names and they'll become the favorite, and all that competition that you were going to have going into training camp kind of is like for the primary backup. So it's a whole kind of random mess, hodgepodge of situations and stuff. So, but it does seem a little weird. The only thing, like I said, in defense of the team is they have a lot of competitions that they want to see play out. They want to see players probably get one more year before they make a determination on whether or not they can be the guy or not. So, there's a lot of situations that factor into the equation that I try to consider when I wonder why a team didn't address a certain position or why they addressed it in a certain way, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And you hope that it's not to the degree that the edge position was last year, because this time last year, everyone was scratching their heads thinking, really, Cassius Marsh, that's your answer there as an edge rusher? And so
he's tough to beat out.
Exactly. So maybe next year, cornerback, free safety, those could end up being the edge rusher of last year. But, you know, I don't think it's to that degree, because I think they do have a lot better players in the secondary. There's just still a lot of question marks there. And then the other wrinkle to this is that 49ers have a new defensive backs coach that we will get into right after we hear from our sponsors. This show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip Six Belts. We tend to focus on all of the additions on the field and all the players and where guys fit and who's new and what was upgraded, what was downgraded at what positions, but coaching has a big impact in the NFL, maybe the biggest impact in all of the major sports. And the 49ers have a new defensive backs coach in Joe Woods, who came over from Denver. A well-respected veteran NFL coach, and Woods said at OTAs that the strong safety and free safety positions would be a little bit more interchangeable this year, so that we might see a little bit more split safety looks like we did toward the end of last season. And I think the defense played a little bit better, actually, when they went away from this scheme that they've been trying to build for so long. So rather than always single high and cover three, maybe we'll see a little more cover two. And Joel Kwaski-Tart was getting some looks in the deep half, it looks like, in practice. And Adrian Colbert up towards the line of scrimmage in the box a little bit. So if that's the case, and that was one of the things pre-draft I was thinking, I was like, okay, figure out what you're doing on defense and then go draft accordingly. So let's say you're going to play more split safety looks and you don't need that Earl Thomas in the middle anymore. Okay, well, you've got some bodies at safety. You always can move Tarvarius Moore back to free safety. Maybe eventually Richard Sherman's going to have to be a guy that's going to be playing safety as well. So go draft some cornerbacks and make sure that group is, because you're going to be playing more man. And so attack that position group. If you're going to be playing cover three all the time, make sure you lock down that free safety position. And kind of like you said, draft somebody high so you know, okay, this is the heir apparent here, and we're really trying to attack this position group. And they didn't really do either one of those things. And then now, hearing Joe Woods talk about the split safety stuff, it might lessen the need at free safety, just because if you don't have Jimmy Ward and you do have some other guys who can play there, and when you've got Tart and Marcel Harris, and you still got Adrian Colbert back there, Tarvarius Moore could do it. If you're doing the split safety thing, maybe it's not as, just not as valuable a position at free safety. So basically, with all those bodies, DJ Reed in there, I mean, basically, it's a long-winded way of saying, what's the important position right now on the 49ers secondary? And I kind of have a question of what that is. And it sounds like maybe the free safety that was always that really important position in this scheme, it's not going to be the case anymore.
I would agree, and I think a lot of that is dictated by the fact that they don't have, like you were saying, the guy there. I think if they had a guy at free safety that they felt was anywhere near like an Earl Thomas, you know, the reason that Seattle's defense worked so well is because Earl Thomas was so good, and they could rely on him to erase plays that a normal free safety isn't able to erase. Same thing with like the Ed Reeds, you know, the guys that are so good at their position that it doesn't matter that the offense knows that, okay, they're coming out cover three, they got a single high safety, but that single high safety is so good that it doesn't matter that there's predictability there. With the 49ers, they don't have that guy yet, so the predictability works against them, and the fact that the person back there isn't as good as you would like to be at countering whatever the moves the offense are going to make. So I think it's a smart move to go to a defense where you know, they can interchange those safeties. It adds a little bit of a wrinkle to the fact that the offense, it's going to be harder to predict for the offense. You know, you could start with both of them kind of at least near the line of scrimmage, maybe like 10, 12 yards back, and then one of them can drop back, and you don't really know, not knowing who that guy is going to be helps the defense a little bit. I think that they're correct in this, in kind of seeing that Joe Kwaski-Tart and Adrian Colbert or whoever wins out that strong safety position or and free safety for that matter. But whoever's up there, I feel like the 49ers have a group of guys who wouldn't be necessarily out of place at either position. You know, Colbert's a big guy. He put on a little bit of weight. He would be fine holding up kind of down there near the line of scrimmage. And the same can be said for Kwaski-Tart. And the same can be said for both of them kind of deep. So, you know, I think that's a smart move in doing that. And the fact that it, you know, like I said, gives them another wrinkle. And it kind of erases that need to have that single high free safety stud that can do everything. Because I think the team should realize that they don't have that right now. Unless we're just missing something or Tarvarius Moore just blows the doors off.
Yeah, and there's potential for that because Tarvarius Moore is a freak. And if they can clean up some of the miscommunications and things that happened that last year, and I think there might have been a little writing on the wall that the 49ers might not have been completely happy with the job Jeff Hafley was doing with the defensive backs, then that's another a big-time addition that really doesn't show up on the roster that could really affect things for the 49ers secondary, as well as the pass rush too. So just Joe Woods' addition, if he makes a big difference. I know the pass rush, if you're going to affect the quarterback, that's going to make a huge difference. So maybe that's just enough to get that defensive back group that didn't play that well last year, and all the advanced metrics say they were one of the worst defensive back groups in the NFL. Maybe that's enough to get him over the hump.
Well, and I think that's also plays into the team's thought process is, you know, they have made a couple of very, very, very significant investments in that pass rush this offseason. I mean, Dee Ford was one of the absolute best pass rushers in the NFL last season. We'll see if he can keep that going. And then Nick Bosa is one of the most, you know, highly thought of prospects in the last few years, maybe since like Myles Garrett. So, you know, I'm sure that they, because the team and Robert Saleh has said this much, they believe that it starts up front. And they're not saying that a great pass rush erases all the problems in the secondary, but they'd rather have a good pass rush and solve problems in the secondary than have a good secondary and have to solve problems in the pass rush type of deal. But you can tell that's just the way they think about it. So they've done everything they can, essentially, to address that front seven. And it should be, unless something goes majorly wrong, you know, knock on wood, it should be pretty impressive to watch this season. And I feel like they want to see how big of an impact that new front seven can have on their secondary. And then I think they'll be able to make a little bit better determination on what kind of investments they want to make, say, at free safety or at cornerback, you know, because maybe, you know, if the pass rush works out, then maybe that's one of their last pieces that they need to pick up, and, you know, they'd be happy with what they have from there.
I want to get to the wide receivers, and you wrote about them recently, but first you mentioned something about the fourth round punter. And when it first happened, I was thinking, oh gosh, you just drafted a 27-year-old punter in the fourth round. Like, I just cannot get behind that. You know, just based on what you think a replacement level punter should be able to do. My question is, let's say Mitch Wisnowski is like that good, and he's on Michael Dixon's level, or even better, he's the best, one of the top 2-3 punters in the NFL. How much difference does that make for that team? Do you think that is like something that the 49ers were lacking so much last year? Do you think that can make that much of a difference? Because there was, I think, multiple beat writers tweeted out that he was just dropping punts inside the 3-yard line like nothing in practice. So maybe he is that much of a weapon. I don't know.
I think that I don't have any problem, you know, like, it's obviously drafting a punter in the fourth round is kind of crazy. We know that it's at least rare. But I've always said that if it works out and it does get to that, like, Michael Dixon level, anywhere near that, no one's going to care. If anything, it'll be considered a good pick.
Yep.
Because, you know, someone like New England, they were quite a few picks later. I think it was some 30 or 40-something picks later. But they drafted a punter in the fifth round. So, yes, it was, like, early fourth compared to late fifth. But at the same time, obviously there's a value in the position. And I think NFL teams are going to start leaning even more towards I think drafting a punter in the fourth round is going to become more common. And the fact that NFL teams have begun to realize that, you know, the ability to pin someone, let's say, anywhere inside the 10-yard line, maybe even inside the 5-yard line, can win you a football game right then and there. You know, just as valuable as somebody being able to catch that football in the red zone type of deal. And I think if you couple it with the idea that the 49ers have a lot of expectations for their fast pass rush, if they can get the ball on the 5-yard line and send their defense out there, then that is a huge advantage. And an offense stepping out on the field, knowing what the 49ers have on their front, knowing that the end zone is right behind them, that's a huge, huge deal. So if he does work out, and you know, it gives me very, very slight, harkens back to Roberto Aguayo, you know, a kicker that's drafted so high that the expectations are so clear of what they expect from you. But yet again, it's, I don't know. He seems like a really laid-back guy. He doesn't seem like somebody who would be affected by that. But if he comes out there and does what he's doing in practice and games, there's not going to be a soul on earth that thinks that's a bad pick. And, you know, the fact that they could – if his punts result even in one or two safeties, you know, throughout the year, then they've done their job, and he's done his job. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. And you know, another aspect that hasn't been talked about much is I think he can kick off, you know, which is – a huge, huge role that Bradley Pinion left behind when he went to Tampa Bay. So, you know, hopefully he can do that too, because Pinion was actually really, really good at that. He was one of the better kickers in the NFL, just at consistently getting touchbacks or short returns. So there's that aspect of things. But like, I think that what we're trying to summarize here is if he's good, no one's going to care. And if he does the things that he's doing in practice in the games, it's going to be awesome to watch. But that's, you know, it's a risk that Lynch is willing to take. And I guess for now, I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's a really cool book about minor league baseball and some guys taking over a team in the Santa Rosa area. And I believe the title of the book is "There's only one." The only rule is it has to work, and so that's sort of how I look at this position.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to, if you think about it.
And I will say there were worse first round picks over the last two decades than Sebastian Janikowski.
Right. I mean, if you look back at his career, sure, they could have taken another player, but how many first round picks don't work out? You know what I mean? If you draft a kicker, and like you said, it works, no one's really going to care. It's just a matter of, it all falls down to what you just said. Is it going to work out? If it works out, then they're in the clear. If it doesn't, then everybody's just going to say fourth round punter, you know, all that stuff.
More with Rob Lauder after this. I'm really intrigued by the wide receiver battle, and there are some familiar names, veterans that might not make the 53. More on that after this. But let's start with Joshua Garnett. And you wrote about his spot on the roster, a little tenuous. How do you see him fitting in with the current 49ers roster? Do you think his time in Santa Clara is done? And are there any other veterans that you see that most people would probably think that they have a pretty good handle on a roster spot that might not be there when they settle with the final 53?
Well, it's with Josh Garnett, the majority of the time he was on the field, he has never really struggled as if he's a bad player per se. I know he's had a few games where it was, you know, got a little rough, but that's the case with all offensive linemen. So it's just a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy, because if he stays healthy, then there's not a team in the NFL that wouldn't want that guy either competing for a starting spot or as like a really, really good backup. So there's nothing about his roster spot that should be in jeopardy. It's just a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy and stay on the football field. That's what's putting him in jeopardy. It would be, you know, like I said, it would be the 49ers would absolutely love, despite the fact that he was a Trent Baalke pick, that doesn't matter. If he has a healthy offseason and starts training camp healthy and competes for the job, and even if he doesn't win the job, they know that they have a valuable starting caliber guard in a backup spot. That's all that he needs to prove. Because I still think that he is a talented offensive lineman. Was he talented enough to be drafted where he was? I don't think so. But at the same time, he's still capable of starting. He's just got to stay healthy. Otherwise, I don't see any reason for the team to keep him on the roster for the same reason. I didn't really see the reason for the team to keep Jimmy Ward on the roster, and the fact that there's just not a good chance that he's going to stay healthy and have an impact on your team, even as a backup. So it's up to him to compete all the way through training camp. Don't miss days. Don't give them anything to think about. And then at the very least, earn the spot and be considered a quality backup.
I want to talk a little bit about Garrett Celek, the tight end position, and I think that might tie into the wide receiver position and how many guys they can carry. Do they view Jalen Hurd as maybe a seventh wide receiver who's potentially an H-back and maybe third tight end type, so they don't have to keep as many tight ends? And then it could be Kittle and Caden Smith, and you don't keep Garrett Celek around, and Garrett Celek still has to be cleared from his back injury and his concussion. The fact that he's still in concussion protocol since December is something that I'm trying to wrap my head around. It would seem like that's a potential career-ending thing, but then someone mentioned that it's possible that he can't be cleared because his back injury has to first be healed, and he has to be cleared for that before he can go through what he needs to go through for the concussion part of his clearance, and so that's why that has taken so long. So I'm not sure what Celek's exact status is with the concussion stuff, but when it comes to wide receivers, when it comes to tight ends, a lot of young guys, a lot of veterans. 49ers brought in Jordan Matthews. Are they planning something with the big slot there that's a semi-tight end-ish kind of role? How do you see that situation playing out with those pass catchers on the 49ers roster?
Well, I'll start with Garrett Celek, and I think it's just a matter of him needing to prove that he's more valuable next down the roster. I think for sure he's a guy that everybody appreciates, everybody loves having there. He's a valuable guy. He's a quality tight end number two. Obviously, somebody as good as George Kittle didn't have any problem sliding right by him, but he's a quality second tight end, and I just feel like he needs to prove that he's noticeably better or noticeably able to contribute to the roster and the efforts more than Caden Smith. And you also have Levine Toilolo, the guy that, you know, that I'm not sure if he's in contention for a roster spot. It's hard to say, just given that, you know, they just drafted a new one and that they added him a little late. So it's a little hard to say what exactly his status is on the roster, but you know that Shanahan always appreciates somebody that he's had experience with. Shanahan's going to know what he's going to get with him, I guess you could say. So, if there is let's say that George Kittle and Caden Smith or George Kittle's obviously a roster lock. I mean, whatever. I don't even know why I brought up his name. But let's say Caden Smith is a roster lock, just for the sake of, I mean, if a fifth-round pick is not a roster lock, I think for the 49ers, they're probably going to consider him one, just because they're not really in the position to take fifth-round flyers on guys that might not even make the roster. So I'm assuming that they wouldn't have picked him unless they thought he was going to make the roster.
Yep.
And so you have guys like Ross Dwelly, Levine Toilolo, an undrafted free agent they signed, Tyree Mayfield. He's actually pretty intriguing. I watched him, and he plays football kind of like a tank. The dude is like it's really weird to watch. Like, he's not fast, but you can literally see him accelerate. And when he catches the ball, he breaks tackles like crazy. He was just, and I had a tweet that I meant to post of a couple of his plays where he just barrels over dudes, and it's really like he's a really physical tight end, and I could see him making kind of a run, at least to be considered. So for Garrett Celek to hold on to that spot, he's just going to have to prove that he's more valuable than the other guys. And that seems a little obvious, but at the same time, that's the only way he's going to do it. You know, and he's got, like I said, he's got the whole, you know, affection going on. Everybody in the locker room seems to like him. He's got his whole Celek time thing going, stuff like that. But it seems like this is the offseason where he might finally part ways with the 49ers if they'd elect to go younger. And, you know, it's definitely, he's one of the ones that are, that's probably more on the bubble than any other veteran on the team.
And when it comes to those wide receivers, Jordan Matthews, they brought in, are they planning something with the big slot? They bring in Jordan Matthews. They bring in Jalen Hurd in the draft, two guys that really fit in that big slot type of a role. I think at least for one more year, Marquise Goodwin's job is relatively safe over there. And between Marquise Goodwin right. and Dante Pettis, they want to have one healthy X receiver all season long. And of course, you're not going to cut a second or third round draft pick. So those four players are pretty well locks. And I don't know how many roster spots the 49ers are going to keep. Trent Taylor seems to be a favorite, but he's an all slot all the time guy. Do they have room for someone who's a slot only player? And I really like Richie James. So, and I know the team really likes Kendrick Bourne as well. So there's a lot of guys battling for maybe six spots, maybe seven, if you consider Jalen Hurd like an OW, like an extra guy. And maybe they're able to find another position. That's why I was thinking maybe tight end is the one that drops one and they keep an extra wide receiver if they do see him as a potential X back. But anyway, when it comes to wide receivers, are the veterans safe? How do you see that shaking out?
Well, like you were saying, I think there's four locks, and you got Deebo Samuel, Dante Pettis, Jalen Hurd, and Marquise Goodwin. I'm not quite ready to say he's a lock, depending on, I could see him getting on a little bit shaky ground if he can't stay healthy. But I would put him as, he's got a very good chance of making the roster. He still has a very solidified role as to what his job in the offense would be. And there's really not anybody else in the group capable of doing what he does and being as fast as he is. And I'd like to think, hopefully he can stay healthy, because when he was, him and Jimmy Garoppolo had a really good connection, and Jimmy Garoppolo was continually targeting him. So I think if he stays healthy, he's definitely, even relatively healthy, got that roster spot locked down. So that, let's just go. They've kept six receivers in the last 2 years. So for now, I could, like you said, I could see them working in another one in there if they kind of justify it as a tight end, some type of hybrid. The other thing that they're going to have to look at too, though, that makes me hesitant to say that they would keep seven receivers, is the fact that they've got, you know, four like high quality running backs. So, you know, they're going to have to mess with that too. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of really tough decisions they're going to have to make with the final player kept it at these positions. But, you know, the first one that comes to me as far as having the next best chances behind Goodwin is Kendrick Bourne, just because he had a very solidified role, stepped in when Pierre Garçon went down last year and did pretty well, you know, especially for a guy who didn't start out playing all the time, but he ended up being a full-time starter. And you know, for an undrafted free agent, he's pretty good. I think at the very least he's earned a spot on the roster, but that spot's in no means guaranteed. I just feel like if anybody's going to have the familiarity with the quarterbacks, the familiarity with the offense, it's going to be him more than anybody else. He's just experienced, and he's proven that he can do it in the NFL. And 42 receptions for over, you know, almost 500 yards isn't necessarily mind-blowing, but it's proving that you can do it and you can be relied upon, which is, you know, it's tough to go. And then right behind him, I like you're saying, is Trent Taylor, who, like you're saying, the least versatile of the group. You know exactly what you're getting with him. Now, he was a beast on third down. He was so good as a rookie. You know, he didn't blow up the stat sheet, but you just saw the plays he was making and saw somebody who you could assume could do this years on end. So it's just a matter of him proving that even if he is less versatile than his counterparts, that, you know, he's just a quality playmaker and he's a good wide receiver. I'd like to see him make the roster, but at this point, you know, especially adding a second and third round player at that position. The spots are dwindling, and they're going to cut good players at wide receiver, which is tough. Jordan Matthews, I always assumed he was kind of on the outs and just the guy that they'd have in, but kind of the early reports, and it's not to say that OTA should be taken very seriously as far as who's succeeding in them and who's not, was that he was kind of one of the more targeted guys, and he was having success and making good catches. And I remember Grant talking about the fact that he stands out among all the receivers, even Jalen Hurd, who's quite a bit bigger than him. But Jordan Matthews is a full, you know, he's not frail, he's not skinny, he's a big dude. So, you know, if he starts earning more looks throughout training camp, I could definitely see them keeping him. But right now, I'd say that he's kind of on the out. Then you have everybody else at that position. Richie James is one that has the special team stuff going for him. I mean, he did really, really well as a kick returner. I think he averaged over 25 yards per return. And then he had that awesome touchdown against the Seahawks. So being able to contribute on special teams is always going to give someone advantage over somebody who might even be a slightly better receiver, say Trent Taylor. But if they feel like Richie James might be a little bit less of a slot receiver than Trent Taylor, but he contributes everything he does on special teams, then maybe he gave him a nod, but they're going to have to make some tough, tough decisions at that position. And I think at least two of the guys that get cut are going to be picked up by other teams. It's going to be interesting. And I'm not even certain how it's going to shake out. And usually I feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on this stuff.
Yeah. And that's, I think, one of the best signs about the 49ers 2019 roster is they have that depth where they're actually going to cut good players now instead of having guys that are just. And it's one of the things that was interesting about that 2017 draft class is everybody contributed. And it was like, oh, man, this is an amazing draft class. But you're waiting. And you're like, oh, actually, this roster was basically at zero. So everybody had to play. And so now that there's competition, that's going to be fun to see how that shakes out and how those guys all compete. And I think you did say something interesting there about the wide receivers is the two veterans who might be players that would be easier to cut just because they're not part of the long-term plan. Jordan Matthews and Marquise Goodwin, they both have abilities that other people don't have on the roster. And so that's, I think, a big key. And Jimmy Garoppolo saying, oh, man. And it was funny because he was like, oh, it's weird to have a receiver that's tall and long arms and can catch a ball that's outside his frame. And I think that was pretty telling when he was surprised being able to throw to a wide receiver like Jordan Matthews because they just haven't had that type of player. And like you mentioned, 4.27 is 4.27 speed, and you can't replicate that either. So it's going to be some tough cuts, and I think it's going to be really fun to see how that position group and how the running back carries are divided. The offense does have some weapons there. So Jimmy Garoppolo being healthy with the mastermind of Kyle Shanahan, it's going to be a fun offense to watch as they get closer to the season and hone this thing down to 53 men. Rob, really appreciate you coming on the show. We're out of time here. I wish I could continue talking to you, but we got to break it off here. So thanks so much for joining the show, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Of course, man. Always a pleasure.
And make sure you find Rob on Twitter at Rob_Louder and read all of his work and all of the fine stuff that they're doing over there at NinersNation.com. And that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to Rob Louder for being so gracious with his time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow along on Twitter at BDPeacock, LockedOn49ers.com. Subscribe on the new Himalaya podcast app, or anywhere that you can find podcasts. Be back Monday. We'll have all kinds of fresh nuggets from OTAs to get into and dip in to the Locked On 49ers mailbag. Talk to you then right here on Locked On 49ers.